Test this.
Play, play, play. Okay. I think we're into it now. I just wanted to make sure it's okay. This side, this tape will be a recording of an interview with Eduardo Catalano at his home on July 9, 1994.
No, because what they wanted to show first is the tech I've written, you know.
Okay.
This is your motive, this is mine.
You know, one of the things you were asking me was about the what I knew about the other schools, but quite a few of the schools have histories of the schools that have been written.
Okay.
And I plan to review those and to see if they provide some insight into what those schools, what the history of the schools like and what the major concerns were and issues there, that, and to see to what extent they are different or similar from the school of design. So I think that's one of the things that I intended to do.
This is your great test. This is your great test. If you look to me, you have to find out what it does on your life, because this is a great test. This is
You've written all of this in connection with the...
In fact, the day after your letter arrived.
My goodness.
And, well, yeah, maybe what we should be done with this material is for you to read it.
All right.
I have written something in relation to the school, then I wrote a series of anecdotes, in case I have any validity, on Henry, on Miss Van der Rohe, on Mr. Fuller, and on Gropius. And,
when did Gropius, he came to the school during, at what some time, to receive an honorary degree or something?
Probably was 1954. No, I was in 54, 53, because I was in the Purchase Street. The party that I gave was in Purchase Street, 53.
Okay? I must have been a sophomore or something. I don't remember anything about that. I don't know how I could have been so stupid to not been aware of it.
On the Martini era, introduced by José de Rivera. How much Regazzo learned about it, if you can send me some advice for you.
I need advice. I need.
My arrival to Raleigh. My first day in the school, the first meeting with Henry. And then one, the most important warning that I would like to give to you is that if you look at students' work from whatever university, and also especially if the work has been done maybe 46 years ago, the setups that were made at the time of the Beaux-Arts, Lawrence Anderson has a series of watercolors, and there was a technique developed, and they are just complete sheets. But I would say that 95% of the student work is not worth anything. And even if they are reasonably good, then you will be equal to the reasonable good of some other schools. So then it will not make any difference whether the school of design and the Harvard or Princeton or whatever, because it's a student work.
Yes.
So watch out with the selection.
I will.
It's going to be another student book with a student work, and that doesn't mean anything because they are all incomplete. It has to, and you have to be very careful in how you select, and not only in the presentation, but the content of the material, you know.
Well, you know, I think I'm aware of that. I've been teaching now for 30 years, and I see the student projects that are done even by the best students, and I mean, I know in my heart that they're still very uninspiring for the most part. It's rare that I see a student project that
what does it mean? What does it mean, the student project? If it is that you begin to develop a sequence of themes in which through the examples of the students, the scene is better explained.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you deal with visual design and the effect that has or the freedom that visual design provides to the mind of the students, not to be too much blocked what the shape of a building is,
mm-hmm.
that is totally arbitrary. And then you begin to see the difference between the exploration for form and structures of those exercises as a preliminary thing from architecture. Then it could become part of a scene, you know. But if you jump from the hospital to a house, to a railway station, as a student, probably doesn't mean anything. And then you say, who cares? Who cares?
But I think the examples of student work that were done in your class, where the students were exploring the formal and structural qualities of the hyperbolic paraboloid, I think that, you know, I think a study to show the kind of systematic looking at a particular kind of...
Do you have enough material from Duncan?
Not yet.
But from Duncan Stewart about his work.
I can get it.
Because it may be a very interesting. A meaningful thing, because people can learn something, you know.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think some of the student publications will be a good guide for some of this, because in many cases, student projects that were developed over a period of time under the direction of a particular faculty member.
When was the last time that the publication was?
It's been years. It's been 6 or 8 years, but the early ones. I mean, I'm really only going to deal with the first 25 years anyway, so.
Because I have here no more than maybe 8 publications of the School of Design.
You only have 8?
8, maybe.
Well, I have all of them that have been published.
Yeah.
And there are, you know, there's the one that, the two that were published of your work, that includes student work. The Horatio had a couple. There are those studies that Duncan did of the subdivision of spheres and things like that. I think all of that, you know, if you take a look at all of these, they one could say that it's not really student projects in the sense that it's a hospital or it's a school or it's a house or something, but it's something a little different from that. And I think that I don't know whether other schools had that kind of systematic exploration of various kinds.
They approach it as a simulation of professional practice.
Yes, I think that's.
And
true.
That is the greatest mistake. The site, the program, the client, mm-hmm. is a mistake. Suppose when even Henry was given projects for the house. When I arrived the first night in Raleigh, the first night in the morning, it was about maybe 6 o'clock, 5 o'clock in the morning, and I took a taxi and I went to Daniel's Hall. The school, I have written something that happened in between. I went upstairs, exploring where the building, and my future class was working on a charrette, because since I arrived late from London, Henry took over the class and gave them a design project. And they had, probably was a house. And there was a man with the name of Schiff from New York, a tremendous Jewish boy that looked like Stalin. And I faced him and I said, what are you doing? He said, well, we are waiting for a teacher that's supposed to come in these days, and they didn't give us this project. Now, the project that Henry gave was one for a client that was called Walter Dopius. That was a combination of Walter Ropius and Alan Dunn.
Oh.
No, Alan Dunn, what was the name of the dog? What is the architect that Fitzgibbon was imitating? From Oklahoma.
Goff. Bush Goff.
Goff.
G-O-F-F.
Well, it was a combination like...
Gropius and Goff.
Yeah, Gropius and Goff. That was the name of the owner. And then the owner expresses all his wishes. That he wants to have this studio here and the garage there and this data. And that is, to me, some stupidity, because what they have to teach first is what the house is, in very general terms, that is in terms of living and circulations and vistas and construction and integrity of the structure with the space and many things. And then whether the man wants to have the refrigerator on the left or the right, or whether he has 3 bathrooms instead of 2, doesn't make any difference, you know? Because first they don't know how to design a bathroom. So that was the problem. And
How did you come to get to the school?
I explained. Okay.
He he contacted you in London. But who told him to? How did he know?
What happened that when I was a student here at Harvard, I performed very well. You know.
According to
a thing that was published once in the newspaper, Gropius said that I was the best student that he had. I don't know whether he was impressed because I won 3 prizes in competition in 4 months.
Mm-hmm.
When I was in his class, that was published in an architecture pencil point and architectural forum. I became known in the country, and it was the time of the war when there was no architecture built.
Mm-hmm.
In 1944-45. So then the competitions were the things that took over the attention of the magazine. And my picture was public with my pipe, and then I was competing with Harry Weiss and Pei and other things. And sometimes Pei was in front of me, and sometimes I was in front of Pei in other competitions. So I became known in the country. And then even when I arrived to Chicago for a visit, and I don't know why I went, because maybe my friend from Bogota suggested to go, because I felt that I had been an idiot all my time. I went to the office of Perkins and Wills,
mm-hmm.
who was a very large office, and when I arrived there, I talked to Mr. Perkins, who was a tall man, and he offered me a job without asking me for my work. And mm-hmm. my recollection that he was going to pay me $600 a month. That it was 1945.
That was a lot of money for that.
When I was getting 400 in South Carolina, almost 500, less than 500 in 1951, six, 7 years later, you know. And I didn't take it because my idea was to go back to Argentina. So then I went to London after 5 years of practicing in Argentina. And I got a scholarship from the British government. And because my record was, it was a good record for the age and so on, they said, no, this man cannot come here as a student, he should teach at the university. So when I arrived in London, they offered me a job and they paid me extra. And I taught for a year, in which I met Bircher.
Charles Bircher.
A very nice man, who I'm very sad that he died, because he was a very nice man. And we became very close friends there for a year. And then one day I got a letter from Henry asking me whether I wanted to go. Now, how did I go? No, Wiki died. And after, for a year, the school appointed visiting teachers just to find out the wrong man. What was it? And I think that they did it. And I have 2 stories. First, an architect from New York with the name of Abraham Geller.
Abe Geller, yes, I know
him. That I knew him because he was a friend of José de Rivera. And when I used to go to New York, I came to marry an American woman once in 1946. I spent a month in New York and I had dinner with Geller and José in his house, the house of José. Eating steaks in the fireplace, beautifully. When he cooked it, he didn't say 1 penny, you know, the highest quality. And then Geller taught in Raleigh. Probably Geller suggested to Rivera to teach or give you a few lectures. And one day they were in a taxi or in a car going to a restaurant with Henry.
Mm-hmm.
And Henry asked Geller whether he could suggest the name of a faculty to replace Nowicki. And the Gela, my recollection is that said to the Rivera, what is the name of your friend that is in London? Like that. And José says Eduardo Catalano. And then probably Henry made a little bit of investigation, who knows what, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know whether he went through magazines or with the word of Gela and
you the think Rivera. He might have called Gropius?
I have no idea. They know that. Rabbi have regard for me. And he wrote me later sometimes when I was in North Carolina, asking me for material for him to show it when he was traveling in Europe, giving lectures and things like that. You know?
Show your student projects. Was
yes, it? Yes, yes, mm-hmm. yes. And they also wrote me too.
I see.
And Gideon too. Because Gideon wrote me a letter saying that please, he says, explain me how this works, because I got to, I give lectures about it. And I can, the public is asking me questions and I cannot explain. So, but when I told Henry that I saw that I came because Gela and the Rivera suggested to him, he said, no, that is not true. I did it and I knew who you were. Now, I have some doubts because it is much more logical than Gela and the Rivera, who I knew and have a close relation with the Rivera, suggested the name and that conversation in a taxi. It's all circumstantial evidence, like the Simpson case.
Yes.
But the pieces are falling more together. Don't you think so?
Yes.
In a taxi, and the person has to have too much imagination to invent those things. Well, I think that Henry always wanted to prove that he was a man. Because, suppose, how did I come to Raleigh? Through Gela and Rivera. How did Horacio come to Raleigh? Through me. And what happened that I think that the faculty has established what I call here a chain reaction.
I see.
The
connections.
Yeah, there is a critical mass first, and then there is a chain reaction, and then we were highly selective. When the faculty was interviewed, mistakes were made. And sometimes when Henry selected somebody, like the person who was the head of the department the first year that I arrived, I don't recall his name, he didn't last for more than a year.
Was this Leipzig or Pierce?
Yes, that one.
I never knew him, but yes. I've read his name. And
yes, that was it. I didn't remember the name. He was a nice man. He was the head of the department. It gives the impression that they have too much inspiration. The students didn't like him, and he taught for a year only. For a year
so he was a. I didn't realize he was the department head for a year. He filled in between when you came and
when was,
and Novitsky.
And after he left the head of the department, Henry asked me if I wanted to be the acting head, and then. I was not an American citizen, and I don't know whether there was. But Henry was finding an excuse to appoint me only the acting head to save $500 of salary, or whether there was a regulation.
I think there must have been a regulation because Novitsky was also acting head.
Huh? And that no foreigner can be head, you know.
Well, it might at that time. I think that's not the case anymore.
It was absurd in a way, because they had nothing to do with security. Like that a foreign cannot be president. Mm-hmm. Even Henry Kissinger was Secretary of State and
acting Secretary. Well, you know, there was just to fill in a little bit, some of the correspondence
are you recording?
Yeah, this is all recorded. It's okay, though. I got plenty of tape, Eduardo. Yeah. It's very inexpensive, so mm-hmm. don't worry about it. This, at least my grant can pay for that. But when Henry was appointed, he wrote. I saw a letter that he wrote to the chancellor saying that he would like to bring with him several very good men from Oklahoma. And he mentioned Leipziger Pierce, George Matsumoto, Jim Fitzgibbon, Duncan, maybe one other. I can't remember. And then he said, there's one other whom I hope to bring, but he has not decided yet, Mr. Goff. He had invited him to come, but apparently he decided not to.
It was a blessing.
Not to come. I'm sure it was a blessing because he would have, but the thing that was real interesting was it said that there, some of the historical stuff that I've read indicated that there was some concern that both Leipziger Pierce, who apparently had a German background, and George Matsumoto with a Japanese background, that there might be some prejudice about him. He said mm-hmm. that apparently Matsumoto never never suffered that at all, although it suggested that maybe Leipzig or Pierce did, that there was some suspicion, at least in the university, about his background.
Well, I suppose that the fact that he left the school was not because of the university, but because of the students.
Yeah, I'm sure that was more than that. Was there any... one of the things that I've always been kind of curious about, was there any residue of the Nowitzki influence? I mean, or did it fade immediately after his death? I mean, was there any...
I didn't see any.
You didn't see any remaining?
No.
Often the curriculum, the way it was set up, was attributed to Nowitzki's design. I mean, you probably remember this illustration of the curriculum overlaid on a tree that was kind of had branches that went up. And I just wondered if there were. I guess by that time that pretty much it had faded. But
I have written here something that I hope that you keep it private. You know, again, because. It's not a joy to get a position in the school due to the death of somebody else. It's not comfortable for me, you know, to have gone to North Carolina due to Matthew's death.
Mm-hmm.
Because the fact that I went to North Carolina, it opened doors to me. I never thought to come to America. I don't feel like an immigrant in the terms of Lawrence Anderson that comes like a Haitian or to make a better living. They have no idea. I have my office in Argentina. I feel that I was invited to come here and I think that I perform well.
Of course.
You know? And sometimes I wish that many of the immigrants are like a group of people who came to this country. There are thousands and thousands who contribute to the country at different levels, you know.
Sure.
They are not to exploit it because most of the immigrants want to do it to get a better life and so on. And I feel guilty in a way that I came due to the death of Nowitzki, because the tragedy of one person mean sometimes the benefit of another individual. Mm-hmm. And this is not very pleasant, you know. but the thing that I wanted to mention was that my opinion of Nowitzki is that his talent has been magnified. And that his notoriety is the arena in Raleigh, that he probably was built up by Louis Mumford, who I thought I had an association with him.
Yes.
And one thing that I wanted to warn you, and I know that you will not follow my advice, I am completely sure on that, is that I have seen all the freehand drawings of Nowitzki. Not all, but I said
yes.
Whatever was published in many places. And I would not publish one. I would not publish one. Because they are childish drawings. They are cartoons. The buildings of India that he did and some other things, you know, they are not things. To me, it's a cartoon. It's a painting and the. So when I talk to you first in relation to the standard of the student work, now I related to this one.
I see.
And that it would look, your book would look like having, even I was surprised that Horacio, in his book, he's published 3 or 4 cartoons that is completely, they are wonderful jokes in those cartoons, beautiful jokes. But I was surprised that he did it because he's the complete antithesis of that, you know?
Yes. Well, I'll think about it. I guess at this point I don't have a.
He's a single people and a little trees and little here and yep. That, and it doesn't mean anything, you know? I would say that if you look at the drawings of Le Corbusier, I don't know whether it was Le Corbusier, but they have a kind of There was some Holy Spirit and fluidity and things like that, you know.
You said you've written something about Henry, but I'm curious to how you would assess his his strong points in the school. I think it's one thing that's he's often given a great deal of credit for the school in retrospect. I mean, years now that he's gone,
he's had a kind of a skepticism from the faculty. Everybody felt a little bit uncomfortable mm-hmm. with him.
Yes.
And it was because he was a person, an authoritarian person.
Authoritarian.
Is that the pronunciation?
Yeah, that's right. That's right. I'm sorry.
Authoritarian person. I remember when the expansion of the school was done, the wing mm-hmm. that was designed by Horacio and Masumoto. suppose there was a spot of ink and he just went there and cleaned it, or sent somebody to clean it. And an anecdote that I have here is that one fall, Roy Gasso came wearing a beard, and they met for the first time after vacation in the corridor. And I was with Henry, or with Roy, and Henry looked at the beard, and that was something that it was the period of the crew cut.
Mm-hmm.
So you have a beer. Like that, you know?
Sounds like my mother.
And right with his humor, he said, well, some grow the hair here, some grow it here. And he got a mustache on everything. That was a big one. And that was a very good joke. But that shows that he behaved like a principal of a school.
Mm-hmm.
In which the children have to wear their coats and be on time. He was a policeman in a way, mm-hmm. with the attitude of a policeman. One day when I built the Raleigh house, somebody talked to Henry to see whether I was willing to show them the house. I don't remember, it was a couple from somewhere. And probably they're supposed to come at 9 o'clock, 10 o'clock. And I don't recall why. Oh, I got up late when I was not ready, and so when they came, they had to wait for 3-4 minutes outside until I opened the door to let them in. And the person went and reported that to Henry. You know. So when I arrived to my class at the midday. I went to see him just, I don't know what for, to say that they came. And he said, like my cleaning my throat also, or his throat. He said, you were not ready yet, were you? Like if somebody is a soldier and he has to be. That was a little bit part of his attitude.
Yeah.
I think that the, I don't know who selected Roy Gasso. If I had to make an evaluation of contributions in the school, I think that George Masumoto has made more contributions than Jim Fitzgibbons as a teacher, whether people like it or not, you know. He was more disciplined and more basic, while the things of Fitzgibbons was the joy of life and here and there. And, mm-hmm. And the contribution of Roy, I think, is greater than the one of Leslie Lasky.
Yes.
And the greatest of all, I think, is Duncan Stewart. And, then I mention here something that you may know or not know. That is that when they expanded the jury room into the dome
mm-hmm.
of the lobby, they killed the central space.
Yes.
And Duncan once told me, he said, the wonderful idea would be that I paint back the dome on the ceiling. And he would have been a master because mm-hmm. he knew projective geometry very well.
Mm-hmm.
And then he was going to position himself, entering the space. So it has to redefine the relation what they said, what is with all the lines and then the lantern and whatever mm-hmm. they have there. And it was a bit nice. Because if you see the wall of the Boston Architectural Center here,
yeah.
it's a very interesting solution to it.
Well, you know that's been opened back up.
Uh-huh, no.
Not the floor, but the dome is,
yeah,
is completely
the lobby is flat.
The lobby is flat, yeah. Yeah. So he was talking about in the lobby. Oh, I see.
On the ground floor.
I misunderstand. But you know, there was when they first did it, they hung the suspended ceiling.
That was worse.
That was worse.
Yeah,
was
no,
worse.
He was talking on the ground floor.
On the ground floor.
On the ground floor.
It should do, yeah, he should do that.
It's a pity that he was not done.
It would be, yeah. Well, maybe we can still get him to do it. his last great effort, the last great work.
Or some students. Do they teach descriptive geometry or not?
No.
It's
a shame.
But I mean, it's a shame of who has the power to impose it. It's not that. Don't blame the chancellor or the provost.
Well,
it has to be the. It has to.
It's the faculty.
Academic account. The faculty. The faculty has no power. The faculty has no power.
Faculty. Well, it does now. Yeah. Faculty votes on every new course, that every change.
Who has given them the power? The tradition?
Well, I don't know how it was done in your time, but the curriculum, every decision on voting on, I mean, on courses, curriculum change, is voted on by the faculty. And I mean, it can be from as small a thing as adding one course, 1 hour to a course or something like that.
And do you find that fights? Because history was to have predominance over this one, or
sure.
Or the structure of it.
One of the things that happens is that the university has set a maximum number of hours that you can have. I mean, you cannot exceed a certain number of credit hours per semester. And in order to have descriptive geometry, you have to give up a structures class or a studio, or you give up something else. The restrictions are very severe. But I think in the case of something like descriptive geometry, the main reason is the faculty feels it's too, the argument that I hear, and I've argued against it, but I haven't been effective at it, that the sort of technical level skills are something that students are expected to do on their own, and that the course content should be more scholarly, more academic.
Now, you know what the problem with it is that first there is not a belief in that. Because if they believe it, they find a way to do it. The second is that it may mean very little if they teach it and they don't use it.
Mm-hmm.
And with the mentality of the faculty, they will not use it.
Mm-hmm.
Because they will go to the flat roof or to the pitch roof or to random shapes. And all the fashions of today, so there is not the consistency between or integration between one thing and the other. Suppose we say Duncan and me, there was a kind of unity. He helped in some projects. He made his good contributions, and my project, let's say, mostly were based on this kind of relation between structure and geometry. And we did the half paper of evolution with half notes
But Eduardo, when I was a student,
I used to learn all those techniques. But also the problem is that then it limits the imagination.
It does. I agree. Descriptive geometry was not taught when I was a student, but I taught it when my first experience teaching in 1959.
Mm-hmm.
George Matsumoto was kind of put in charge of that, and we taught it for the first time. I taught two classes each semester of descriptive geometry, and the youngest members of the faculty were assigned to teach that. People like Wayne Taylor and myself, except for they made Gil Thurlow teach it, and Gil didn't have a clue.
But this is like having Shoemaker. You don't know who Shoemaker was.
I do. Yes, I do. He was still there. But that was not taught very long in the school. There was a period of about 5 years, 5 or 6 years that course was taught, and then it was
disability. You know, I cannot say now whether based on computer techniques the students can develop an understanding of the definition of surfaces.
I don't think so.
Through formulas, and then by applying formulas to the computer, they can get the things that you do it graphically in the obsolete way, that is the so-called Monge system, that is one of the strictly geometry.
Mm-hmm.
And that, but when I mentioned to you the Dome of Florence by Brunelleschi, it's amazing because he transformed an octagonal shape, a dome,
mm-hmm.
with eight facets, into one revolution. So he built an octagonal shape, or conceived, let's call it, mm-hmm. octagonal shape, but it's built as one of revolution. So it means that when he put the bricks, the bricks are not meeting at the corner between the facets of the octagon in different directions, but they are all continuous. And he said, as an actor, because he invented, visualized cones in a space that they have drawn it
mm-hmm.
inside the dome, thousands, hundreds of cones. And then that cone, when began to meet the cylindrical surface of what they call sail or face,
mm-hmm.
the octagon, the intersection of that the cylinder with that cone creates a catenary curve that follows the surface of the cone, so it's a curve that is double curve. And then, because this curve is within the surface of the dome, of the cone, it's within a circular form.
Mm-hmm.
And then the bricks are radial, and he transformed octagonal into circular and horizontal into curve. So the things are like this. And this intersection, and I don't know how he can imagine that those shapes can be combined with a cone, and it's an act of aging.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why I say that it should be taught, but it should not be taught if it is not, it should not be taught if the computer allows them to do that. But exercises should be done in order for them to know that those things exist.
Mm-hmm.
And then it should not be done even with a computer if the architects are still passing through a period of Bauhaus mm-hmm. or whatever style it is.
I don't know what the computer, I'm very ignorant on that. I'm embarrassed to say I really don't know whether it can work or not, how they can make use of it. I know that the students are...
Well, they do, because when I work with the student, the young man, that did a computer drawing from my book, I did the surface, and then he put it in the computer, and he said, what you have drawn cannot happen. They are not curves, they are straight lines, which I am not yet convinced that is true. But they can find anything, you know? And then when I, these funny shapes, I gave a section with ellipses, indicating the foci of the ellipses and mm-hmm. the height and the axis and so on. And then he finds through the computer all the penetrations between one surface of another. So, because what is the use of the computer? You know, it's not just to draw, like they use it in office rooms, repeated rooms of place furniture with patterns.
I've seen some of the projects that the students are working on now with the computer. I mean, they can do very interesting color, three-dimensional modeling of space, very, very simply by using, they start out with essentially a set of modules or a set of objects, which they can organize in almost any way. I mean, as a first step to try to understand how to use that. And we have a teacher who's, I think, quite imaginative in sort of introducing the technique. You know, how you can start out with a sort of a kit of parts, and you can organize them in any way. I mean, you give somebody a certain number, 200 pieces of something, and they can put this together in almost an infinite number of arrangements. And students can do that after 30 minutes of instruction. They can begin to do that. The problem is they don't know what to do with them.
Well, and also the teacher may not give the proper projects in order to create a continuity of development, you know?
Well, it's basically teaching technique. and basically teaching how to do something.
Yeah, but if the teachers are too much concerned with the so-called reality of the profession, and they give a program and a site and the regulations to simulate that is what the Society of Architects wants. They want to have a glorified draftsman. Remember when every time the American Institute gets involved into Hugh Stubbins gave a lecture in Dante to Green. Gave a lecture at MIT maybe 4 years ago. And he was asking for draftsman. He was suggesting what to teach.
Well, almost all the architects in North Carolina, that's what they're looking for. Yeah. Even our own graduates,
yeah.
who we thought had been trained to higher ideals.
Yeah.
What I would like, what you could help me the most with, Eduardo, is to help sort of define anything that you saw as being special about the school. I mean, either the freedom for the teacher to operate autonomously or other...
One thing before I forget, I think that you should dedicate the chapter to the student publications.
Yes.
Because it was one of the first, I suppose, in the country. I don't know whether Yale had a perspective came later
on. I don't know which one was first. That would be real interesting to find out.
Yeah, but I mean, still, if it was second, it's a little town. That is not New Haven, you know, with the tradition and so on. And then the quality of the material that was presented, published, at least to the time that I was there, not because I had nothing to do with the publication. I was never an advisor to the publication. But I translated the articles of Nervi and Torroja, and Gallio, who
came
in my house, you know, and that and some other things. And I don't know whether then sometimes I thought that probably the publication was too soft towards the faculty.
Too soft?
Towards the faculty. I have a hunch only, you know, and then try to publish some faculty work.
Oh, I see.
That didn't mean too much, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's better to get good work from abroad or any part of the country than to give it to the faculty that everybody knows what it is for the sake of publishing. But this should be a little chapter in itself.
Yes. Well, I see, you know, I was an editor. It was the year after you were gone. I edited three of the, they were very slim volumes, but I have a real involvement with that, and I did. I'm very familiar with what.
Didn't you print also in your school, like Sacristes, Building Footprints?
Yes, Building Footprints.
That is a very nice publication, too.
And it's been out of print for years and years. Yeah. They never wanted to republish it for some reason. Maybe Sacriste. I don't know whether he discouraged them from republishing it or what.
I don't think that he would have.
I don't know why it was never republished, because for years they were.
Republished by whom? By whom?
Well, it was. Some issues of the publication have been reprinted several times, and because there was a demand for them. And I remember when I was that there were frequent requests for copies of the Building Footprints issue, but there was never it was never decided by Henry to reprint it or anything. I don't know why, but I suspect even today it would be something that people would be very pleased to have. Maybe we should publish that again rather than my book.
No, but the, it should be repeated that there is not a larger publishing effort. And one thing that probably is missing in your school, or maybe you have it and I am not aware, is a newsletter.
No, the newsletter is published right now. I'll send you some copies. This is something at least that Tom Reagan did during his tenure, was to get a regular, comes out three times a year.
The one that is overdone is the one from Harvard.
Well, I don't think ours is very good. I don't, it's too much, it's over-designed in terms of visual design, or graphic design, and, but the people in Ellenzweig's office, the alumni who were there, get it, and I'll make sure that you get on the mailing list so you receive it. I should have checked to see if you were getting that, but
Well, I'm not in the mailing list of MIT, I discovered, because there is a magazine that they published, I never got it, And then when there was the memorial for Lawrence Anderson, I was not invited because I am not in the mailing list.
I still get stuff from MIT, although I've never sent them any money. I always make contributions to state. I figured that MIT is wealthy and we're a poor institution and any of the contributions go here, but they continue to send me alumni newsletters and things like that. But now we do have that, although, as I said, I'm not very pleased with it. I hope that can be improved. But we're going to have to change this, just turn this over. Let me just do it.